Hello and welcome back to the Archaeology News Weekly. I am, of course, your host, David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details of each story, including that important source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now, let's get started with... what I want to start with. Funny shaped stone turns out to be a Neolithic axe head. And there's calls for the ancient sites to be protected and near a Scottish wind farm site. And a new discovery may revise our understanding of the first North Americans. An Iron Age hill fort is still being quarried in England, ironically, for stone to repair old buildings. And a Cornish stone circle is being damaged by cattle. Then we report on, among other finds, an 11,000-year-old settlement that's been unearthed in Syria. And 1.5 million years is a new date for Homo erectus's arriving in India. And not so old by comparison, but just as interesting, 3,000-year-old artifacts are discovered in southern China. Tree Islands now in Florida, where they built on prehistoric rubbish tips. And not suited for damp prehistoric rubbish tips in the middle of the Everglades, did Neanderthals discover the use of fire? And we'll stay with the Neanderthals to the end, so to speak, as we may have found the last refuge as artifacts are found in Greece. Remember, of course, you could be listening to this on the fabulous Stone Pages Archaeo News app. Keeping up with all the news as it happens. Just get yourself along to Stone Pages and find the app, download it, and you'll be listening as you move. Anyway, let's get on with today's podcast. A funny-shaped stone that's been used as a shelf ornament turned out to be a 5,000-year-old Stone Age axe head. The axe head had been dug up in a Norton Keynes, a village in the Midlands of the UK, 12 years ago. Its true origin was not discovered until it was taken to a meeting of the local historical society and family history group, where it was identified by Roger Knowles, the chairman and a local archaeologist. He said that it's a Neolithic hafted stone axe that would have been bound to a wooden haft with a rawhide strips made of Cumbrian tuff away up in the Lake District. The excitement of the discovery was short-lived, however, as the area where it was found is about to disappear under a proposed housing development. The village of Norton Keynes is Saxon in origin, but the archaeology predates this period, and there are four sites of specific interest, all of which lie within the boundary of this new and proposed development. The area has potential to be rich in artefacts, as it's lain undisturbed as farmland for thousands of years. Well, here's an option, because we probably will have to build that housing development. There's a real chance here for the archaeological contractors to work with an obviously interested group at this village of Norton Keynes. So let's hope that we hear some of this going on. Now, to Scotland. Archaeologists have asked the Neolithic and Iron Age sites are protected during the construction of a potential new wind farm site in Caithness. Npower Renewables propose erecting 9 turbines at Burn of Wilk, and while there are no known archaeological remains on the site itself, there are 5 designated scheduled ancient monuments nearby. A Highland Council archaeologist said the wind farm would sit in historic ritual and burial landscape. A Brochet warehouse, along with Cairn of Hannach, a chambered cairn on the south side of Warehouse Hill, are among the 5 scheduled sites. The others are a cairn at Watnan and the Hill of Many Stains, as well as the cairns of Warehouse. Highland Council archaeologists have asked that the landscape be preserved by record before construction work starts. They have also recommended that the sands be protected during the work and efforts made to reduce the wind farm's visual impact. Historic Scotland had originally objected to the project, but withdrew its objections after the plans were revised. Have to say, I have been up to the Hill of Many Stains, and it is quite a remarkable monument. Even the stains themselves, or stones, actually only stick up about 3, maybe 6 to 10 inches out of the ground, but they stretch for metres in all directions. It's like, it's unbelievable, within a spectacular view over the North Sea. Anyway, you don't want to hear about my holidays. Let's move on to North America. The first human inhabitants of North America settled at least 2,000 years earlier than the people previously identified as the first Americans. This new revelation by archaeologists who have unearthed a remarkable assemblage of stone artifacts belonging to an earlier Americans at an archaeological dig in central Texas, details of which are being reported in the Science magazine. The ancient stone artifacts were found lying undisturbed, or so they hope, at an archaeological site over 60 kilometres southwest of Austin. Michael Waters, who's director of Texas A&M University's Center for the Study of First Americans, led the dig at the site near the head of a small stream in what's become known as the Buttermilk Creek Complex. Waters says the latest relics were buried in a clay layer beneath sediment containing Clovis artifacts that were previously thought to be America's earliest settlers. But Waters say the stone artifacts his team had uncovered include a wide variety of tools dating back as far as 15,500 years ago. The dating, which relied upon a technique known as optically stimulated luminescence, or OSL, that can tell how long minerals have been buried, is robust, says the team. And they added that the observed sequence is also reliable, and the sediments have not been mixed up after the tools were dropped. They found a large number of chisel-like tools, indicating that the people were working bone and wood. What is special about the site is that it has the largest number of finds dating to the pre-Clovis time period, and it also shows a range of different technologies. Evidence of Clovis people was first discovered in 1932, and ever since then, Waters says, archaeologists have argued about whether other sites also belong to the Clovis civilization or were older, unrelated settlements. The discovery strengthens the case for two theories that traditional archaeologists laughed at not so long ago, that the first Americans came from earlier than 13,000 years ago, and that they didn't walk over a land bridge into North America from Siberia, but came by skin boats at least 16,000 years ago, if not earlier, skirting along coastlines of the Aleutian Islands, then Alaska, Canada, and into the Americas. Waters believes that they came by boat, hunting seals beside Ice Age glaciers a few miles at a time, surviving Ice Age weather, bringing families and even their pet dogs. He thinks the first colonies in America sprouted tens of thousands of years ago along the Columbia River Basin between Washington and Oregon. Waters thinks the Buttermilk people used the stone tools to make spear points from bone. Some tools had notches with convex edges, carving tools. Some chisels had edges dulled from scraping hard surfaces. One of the most amazing finds was a golf ball-sized nodule of hematite worn flat on several sides. Hematite, when mixed with animal and plant oils, produces a red paste for decorative purposes. Professor DeLahaye from Vanderbilt University in Tennessee said that the OSL technique used by Waters was less reliable than radiocarbon dating, which has been applied to other early American sites, and assigning the artifacts to Clovis and pre-Clovis technologies was not straightforward because the site lacked the projectile points required to reliably distinguish between the two. In addition, said the anthropology professor, the tools come from a floodplain deposit that's only 6 centimetres thick. This, he said, was potentially problematic because of the possibility that artifacts were actually transported about by water. Professor Gary Haynes from the University of Nevada in Reno praised the good work by the research team. It's always worrying when somebody praises your good work. But he said it was plausible that natural processes could have caused some stone tools to migrate downwards in the clay, giving the impression of a pre-Clovis layer. Waters had been working on the site since 2006, and analysis of the artifacts collected from the site is still ongoing. I don't think we have heard the last of this one. But it looks like we are going to hear at the last of this hill fort. Stone will continue to be quarried from Ham Hill Country Park near Yeovil in Somerset for the next 80 years after planning permission to extend the site has been agreed. The Iron Age hill fort near Norton-sub-Hamden is the only place in the country where ham stone can be quarried. But as of July 2010, it was estimated that the current reserves would only last for another 18 months. With much of the remaining stone to the south of the park being deemed unusable, a new source was needed. Permission has now been given by Somerset County Council to extend the quarry up to 6,000 tonnes a year to the east of the current site. English Heritage said the plans presented a dilemma because while Hamstone was needed to restore historical and important buildings, extending the quarry would impinge upon a major historical site. Giving its view of the plan, it said Ham Hill is both the main source for the continuing supply of Hamstone, used historically for many important buildings, and is the site of the largest hill fort in England. This presents a policy dilemma. The County Council's Heritage Department said that the need for Hamstone balanced out any possible damage to the site. The department said the public benefit of the proposal should be considered alongside the loss. In this case, the applicant is putting forward a mitigation strategy alongside a research and outreach project that will lead to quality information concerning the archaeological remains on the site being found out. So in their view, in this case, the loss, harm to the heritage asset, oh, don't you just hate the word asset, can be mitigated, oh, that's another word, by the submitted project. The site is designated as a scheduled ancient monument and is the largest Iron Age hill fort in England. Most of the hill is also a country park, although the existing quarry and the proposed extension are excluded from this. So that's a very interesting one to debate. What do you do? You need the stone to repair ancient monuments, but in doing so, you're going to damage an ancient monument. A tricky decision. I certainly would not like to have been the people that had to make that one. Now, down to Cornwall, where we got damaged not this time by people, but by longhorn cattle, which were introduced as part of a higher-level stewardship conservation grazing scheme onto the Carnyoth Common near St Just. They have destabilised a stone of the ancient Tregaseil Circle. 2 years ago, some four or five stones were loosened for the same reason. Clumps of cattle hair on many stones show they're using it as a rubbing post. It's only a matter of time before this herd creates more havoc. These concerns were relayed to Natural England several years ago by the Save Penwith Moors group. According to the group, the presence of these animals will not only damage the important archaeological site, but, as has been witnessed by local regular walkers over the moor, also cause a dramatic drop in the number of walkers over the past 2 years. Yes, I can imagine being confronted by a longhorn cattle might make you decide to change your route. Save Penwith Moors consider the current higher level stewardship agreement covering the common as unnecessary and expensive. It's costing about £20,000 a year for 10 years. A ruin of the moor through virtually intrusive new barbed wire fencing, gates and cattle grids, and an intimidating and potentially dangerous presence of free roaming cattle that can and do frequently graze on the northern eastern parts of the common, for which there's no known ownership. Anyway, it's time that the scheme is abandoned, all the new stop roofing removed, and most of these issues are now being assessed by the Parliamentary Ombudsman as part of a complaint of alleged mismanagement by Natural England. Well, that's going to be quite a vicious battle, but if you want to keep up with it, then you can always go on to www.savepenwithmoors.com. A Syrian-French archaeological mission unearthed a small village in an archaeological site of Tel Karasa in the west of Soueida province in Syria, dating back around 11,000 years. The survey conducted at the site over the last 2 years allowed the archaeologists to discover a small village of eight roundhouses whose inhabitants depended on fishing, growing cereal crops and collecting wild fruits. Wasim Al-Shirani, head of Soueida Archaeology Department, said the houses indicated that the human groups in the area were fully settled at this period, as they had now begun cereal farming and the raising of cattle. The presence and humans in this region was made possible by the existence of the Karasa Spring, which feeds a small lake in the middle of the area. Settlement on the southern mound of Karasa started around 2,500 BCE, The inhabitants would have even participated in the building of the first cities in the area. An occupation of this village continued till around 200 BCE. Architectural remains of a 2-metre-thick basalt wall and various other constructions from the Bronze Age were also uncovered in the excavations. The report of the Syrian-French mission said the excavations have revealed 522 archaeological sites in the Al-Lajat region from the ancient historical periods of the 7th millennium BCE. Among them, of course, was Tel Karasa. Now to India, where finds unearthed in a southeast Indian excavation offer a cutting-edge revision of hominid migrations out of Africa more than 1 million years ago that spread pivotal tool-making methods. Makers of the specific style of teardrop-shaped stone hand axe, flat-edged cleavers and other implements that originated in Africa around 1.6 million years ago reached South Asia not long afterwards, between 1.5 and 1 million years ago, according to archaeologist Shanti Papu of the Sharma Centre for Heritage Education in Tamil Nadu. Rather than waiting around 500,000 years to head into South Asia, as many researchers had previously thought, the African hand axe tradition moved swiftly into South Asia. Archaeologists categorise this family of artefacts as Acheulean tools. Most researchers regard Homo erectus, a species that originated around 2 million years ago, as the original brains behind the Acheulean innovations. Shanti Papu said the Acheulean toolmakers were clearly present in South Asia over 1 million years ago. Several previous excavations in other areas of India have also yielded these Acheulean tools, but the finds lack firm dates. Archaeologist Robin Dennell of the University of Sheffield in England proposes that Homo erectus must have rapidly moved from East Africa to South Asia. Papu's new finds raises the possibility that 800,000-year-old hand axes previously discovered in southeastern China indicate the presence of Homo erectus groups that came from South Asia, or at least exposure of Chinese hominids to Acheulean technology. Homo heidelbergensis, a species first identified in Europe that some researchers now suspect inhabited East Africa and possibly Asia, trekked northwards to the Middle East and then westwards to Europe by 500,000 years ago. Until now, scientific consensus held that Acheulean toolmakers, presumably Homo erectus, reached the Middle East at least twice, around 1.4 million and 800,000 years ago, but went no further. Homo heidelbergensis then took Acheulean implements from Africa to both South Asia and Europe approximately 500,000 years ago. If this was the case, then the older Chinese hand axes would have to represent a tool tradition that developed independently of external influences. Any relationship of those Chinese finds to tools unearthed by Papu's group remains unclear, though. Additional evidence suggests that Homo erectus left Africa for several destinations throughout Asia, beginning at least 1.8 million years ago, wielding nothing but these simple chopping tools. The Jiangxi Provincial Institute of Cultural Relics and Archaeology carried out archaeological excavations at the Nantodun site and explored other sites in the area dating back 3,000 years, including the unearthing of a group of early Celtic ceramics with a subtle sea-green glaze, as well as stone tools and a number of bronzes. The excavated celadon shows that the production skills were already well established in terms of heat control, glaze and decorations. The celadon was no different from the sophisticated celadon made by the late Eastern Han Dynasty around 1,000 years later in 25 CE. This site has provided new physical evidence for the research into early celadon production. Now to Florida and a story which is literally rubbish. Piles of midden deposits left by humans thousands of years ago may have helped form tree-covered biodiversity hotspots in the Florida Everglades, according to a new study. The so-called tree islands of the Everglades are patches of relatively high and dry ground that rise from the wetlands. They stand between 1 and 2 metres higher than the surrounding landscape and can cover 100 acres or more. They host 2 or 3 times the number of species living in the surrounding marsh. Previously, scientists had presumed that many of the larger tree islands, which have a veneer of peaty soil, formed on topographic high spots and carbonate bedrock underlying the Everglades. But research reported at a meeting of the American Geophysical Union in Santa Fe suggests that the real foundations of some of these islands may be prehistoric rubbish heaps, known as middens. These middens, a mix of discarded food, charcoal, shell tools and broken pottery, would have been slightly higher and drier than the surrounding marsh, offering a foothold for trees, shrubs and other vegetation, says paleoecologist Gail Chimura of McGill University in Montreal, Canada. Bones in the midden would have also been a good source of phosphorus, which is a nutrient otherwise in short supply in the Everglades. Their fieldwork at a couple of tree islands, as well as previous research, indicates that what had previously been considered to be elevated bedrock are actually concrete-like layers of carbonate left within the peaty soil when water drawn up by the trees evaporates, leaving behind this dissolved mineral. Beneath the so-called perched carbonate layers, the researchers found more peat and midden material. But just how and when these perched carbonates form is still up for debate, and the fact that the layers form within soils, not as part of a chronological sequence of sediment layers, makes it particularly difficult to determine their age. Paleontologist Christopher Bernhardt of the US Geological Survey in Renston, Virginia, surveyed at least two tree islands in the eastern Everglades, and like the ones in the new study, they also have perched carbonate layers and middens that overlie layers of peat. Yet analysis of the pollen and spores in the peat underlying the middens suggests that the islands hosted trees, shrubs and ferns well before people arrived. So early rubbish dumps may have helped the islands grow, but they didn't start the process, he says, adding that although bones in a midden are a good source of nutrients, it's just as likely that the phosphorus that nourishes the tree island's vegetations comes from the prodigious amounts of guano left by birds attracted to these ecosystems. Another debate to be had. Now, our Neanderthal ancestors may not have been as stupid as we have been led to believe. I never believed they were stupid in the first place. But anyway, it's widely accepted by archaeologists that the major technological achievements of early humans were the manufacture of stone tools and, of course, the control of fire. A new study has been made of the latter by Professor Will Robrooks of Leiden University, Netherlands, and Paolo Villa, curator of the University of Colorado Museum of Natural History. They examined possible sites for the control of fire dating from 1.6 million years ago to 35,000 years ago. This review covered up to 141 potential sites and involved extensive research of European excavations, as well as a vast amount of research in libraries all over Europe and the United States, as they compiled an index of confidence for each site based on their findings. The key factors in the assessments were the presence of charcoal, heated stone artifacts, burned bones, heated sediments and hearths. They concluded that if a site had a minimum of two of these markers, then they classed the site as having solid evidence of the control of fire. Some striking conclusions have emerged from the research. The first is that the earliest believed sites in Europe for the control of fire date from 400,000 years ago, with the evidence of an ancient hearth in England and another in Germany. But this puts the use of controlled fire in Europe squarely into the hands of Neanderthals. After this date, the evidence of hearths and fires increases rapidly. But more striking than that is the fact that ancient man migrated into Europe over a million years ago. So, for the first 600,000 years, they survived without fire. And questions now need to be asked exactly how they survived harsh winters without it. The co-authors believe that earlier evidence could be put down to lightning strikes or spontaneous fires. Paleoanthropologist Lauren Strauss from the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque believes that their findings mean rethinking our beliefs on evolution. As things stand, their evidence, or lack thereof, really questions this ambitious theory that fire made humans. Now, it's long been thought that the Neanderthal hunter-gatherers kept to lower altitudes where game and wild animals would be more plentiful. However, Greek archaeologists working in the Pindos Mountains of northern Greece have found the remains of two major Neanderthal sites. The areas, first excavated in 2003 by the University of Thessaloniki, are at an altitude of over 1,700 metres. And the Neanderthals moved between this level and higher, up to 2,200 metres. The sites have been dated at between 50,000 to 35,000 years ago, towards the end of the Neanderthal era in Europe. It's believed it was climate change in the late Pleistocene era which forced them out of the lowlands and valleys of more northerly climes in search of food, Over 2,000 artifacts have been found, including flint blades and sharp-tipped implements used for hunting. Was this the last group of Neanderthals in Europe? That is a mystery that still remains to be solved. So don't forget, our news is now available on the iPhone, iPod, Touch and iPad. Have a look at www.stonepages.com/app. And of course, life wouldn't be complete without the fabulous Past Horizon site, pasthorizons.com. There you'll get news, views, articles, videos, oh, and so much more. Can I also remind people that many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities are available on my own site of Badger, B-A-J-R, which you'll find at, unsurprisingly, www.bajr.org. And remember, more can always be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. Thanks again for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you'll return again to us next week.